Can any of us ever disagree without always trying to make our point be the point that matters most? Can we be free to have that kind of speech? Writer Ken Macon walks readers through history today, considering the violence that took an activist's life last week and the fallout from it. That fallout has included throngs of people, including professors and a journalist from the Washington Post, Karen Atiyah, who lost her job for otherwise thinking that they and she could speak freely in the United States. Although free speech isn't always accepted speech and doesn't always go without punishment, we can reject attempts to silence those speaking about a murder and abhor the actual murder at the same time. It's Wednesday, September 17th. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning. I'm Ira Porter. First, a curation of news briefs from staff writers and wire services. Many of these are developing stories. Find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs. President Donald Trump filed a $15 billion defamation lawsuit against the New York Times. The suit, filed in U.S. District Court in Florida, cites several articles and a book published ahead of the 2024 election, calling them part of a decades-long pattern of intentional and malicious defamation against President Trump. It follows a $10 billion suit Mr. Trump brought in July against the Wall Street Journal and Rupert Murdoch over a story on his ties to Jeffrey Epstein. Colombia's Peace Tribunal issued its first sentence on war crimes committed during decades of conflict, finding seven former FARC leaders guilty of policies that led to the kidnapping of 21,000 people. The court said the group kidnapped civilians for ransom and held soldiers and politicians to exchange for imprisoned rebels. The former leaders must work on projects such as locating missing persons and clearing landmines, and take part in symbolic acts of reparation with victims. Also, we can hear more cosmic waves with the help of artificial intelligence. Albert Einstein predicted the existence of gravitational waves more than a century ago, but astronomers didn't observe them until 2015. Now, researchers from Google DeepMind and the LIGO Observatory have built an AI tool called Deep Loop Shaping that reduces the noise when they track these waves, cutting interference as much as 100-fold. Scientists say it shows promise for use in fields from aerospace and navigation to civil engineering. Now, today's Monitor stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com for our latest news. Republicans have long railed against cancel culture and blamed the left for seeking to curb free speech. Now, they are catching criticism on the same grounds in the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination and potentially going further by having government officials involved. Cameron Joseph reports from Washington for the Monitor. History shows the loss of a charismatic leader can propel a political movement into something even more powerful, or mark the beginning of its decline. For now, Charlie Kirk's allies are vowing to continue what he started. Simon Motlake and Victoria Hoffman report from Boston for the Monitor. Journalists and professors are among those who have lost their jobs for remarks they made in the wake of Charlie Kirk's killing last week. Our columnist was reminded of a political silencing that happened over 60 years ago. President Lyndon B. Johnson's effort to quiet Fannie Lou Hamer at the 1964 Democratic National Convention. Kim Macon writes for the Monitor. Across Syria, community leaders are choosing representatives to a parliament tasked with overhauling the country's laws and setting a new constitution. If the process prioritizes technocratic expertise over parties and politics, Syrians hope it's a step toward building a democratic legislature. Taylor Luck reports from Damascus, Syria for the Monitor. Before Shakespeare, there was Christopher Marlowe, whose poetry lifted up Elizabethan drama and augured a rivalry with the Bard of Avon. A Latin scholar who loved language, Marlowe broke through rigid conventions and government censorship to write plays that set the culture on its head. Contributor Heller McAlpin writes for The Monitor. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on juggling change and challenges at the UN. This month's annual gathering of the United Nations marks 80 years since its founding charter was adopted in the waning months of World War II. Since then, the UN's membership has almost quadrupled, from 51 nations to more than 190. It has achieved successes in global health, peacekeeping, women's and children's rights, poverty reduction, and treaties that govern international communications, atomic energy, and air transport. But alongside these, the UN's challenges and divisions have also multiplied. The United States has long been the UN's largest funder. However, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio claims the post-war global order is not just obsolete. It is now a weapon being used against us. The administration has accused the International Criminal Court, for example, of unfair investigation of U.S. personnel. The U.S. has recently slashed foreign assistance in general and scaled down participation in several multinational agencies and security alliances. The UN now faces difficult discussions over its funding and purpose, requiring it to reflect on the changeless values that drove its creation. The UN's founding ideals, dignity, justice, solidarity, are not obsolete, says Jim Bendel, a former professor at the University of Cumbria in Britain and consultant to the UN post-war structures, were designed for a world that no longer exists, he agrees. But their spirit, he writes, represents a future if we dare to change course. Many citizens across the globe, notably Americans, still believe in multinational cooperation. In July, the Pew Research Center reported that 57% of Americans hold a favorable view of the UN, an increase of 5 percentage points over last year. Support for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is committed to mutual defense as well as democracy, human rights, and the rule of law, is at 77%, according to Gallup. The American Enterprise Institute concludes that more than half of 40 selected multinational organizations contribute significantly, or some, to U.S. interest. At the high-level UN sessions next week, world leaders will present their views on the future of the UN and divisive global issues, including the wars in Ukraine and Gaza, as well as civil conflicts and climate change. There will likely be abstentions, vetoes, or walkouts. Pursuing peace is not easy and will require the UN to be better at mediating conflict and forging consensus. Upholding the UN's founding purpose, U.S. President Harry Truman said in 1945, would tax the moral strength and fiber of us all. But having the UN charter at all was a cause for profound thanksgiving, he said. It was proof that nations can state their differences, can face them, and then can find common ground on which to stand. That is the essence of keeping the peace in the future. The stories you just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how God is continually revealing to humanity our heritage as his loved children, which lifts us out of fear that we can ever be out of reach of God's protecting care and guidance. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/csperspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Noel Flatt, Mackenzie Farkas, and Victoria Hoffman.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2025.